So, over the course of this new series that we're doing called More Than Fish, we're journeying through the life of Jonah. And Jonah is really fascinating because he's not the guy you want to imitate for the most part. In fact, in terms of a prophet, he barely kind of really meets the mark. I suppose the prophet, which is someone who hears from God and speaks what he says. There's no doubt that Jonah hears from God, and eventually he will say something, however minimal. But at least at the point of the story we have got to at this point, Jonah has been told to bring a word from God to the city of Nineveh, who essentially judgment was going to come upon unless they changed their ways. And Jonah knew God. It's really important to understand that Jonah knew God's heart. In chapter 4, he talks about the fact that God is long-suffering and merciful. He says, "I knew that this was going to happen," right? So Jonah knew who God was. He just didn't like the implications of that. Primarily, the implications being that Nineveh, if they repented, would be saved. He liked that God was loving. He just didn't like the fact that God was loving of the people he hated. And so he ran. He ran away to Tarshish, and got on a boat. A storm came. The sailors, who were almost more prophetic than he was, kind of asked, "Who did this?" They cast lots, and Jonah was tossed into the sea where he was eaten, or at least swallowed, should I say, by a giant fish. And so Jonah is in this state where there's no doubt a lot of emotion, and this is where we're going to pick up the story, where Jonah is literally in the belly of this giant fish as it's described to us. And I wanted to share tonight in Theological Reflection with Tim, because Tim, by nature of vocation, is a counselor, and by virtue of not only his work but also history, is someone who has spent a long time with people in pain and trauma and suffering. And we see a lot of that in Jonah chapter 2. And so tonight we're going to engage with the text, as I hope that you can too, and we're going to reflect upon maybe how God is speaking through the prayer of Jonah. So first of all, Tim, can you just share with us a little bit of your story and what led you to your role in care, which is obviously a role that each of us all have in some way or form?
Absolutely. So, yep. In a professional sense, context, I guess it's been shorter than my life's experience, but I would suggest and probably challenge us all that we're all involved in care and those nuances of care that we're engaging in with every day. And we all have the capacity to care. Yet, to answer your question, within the context here in Alice Springs, if that's useful, 2008, I moved up here, social work, undergrad. Felt really called. I was a new Christian. So as far as God-centered care was new to me. Yeah. 2 years was up here, moved back to Central Vic, and then 7 years later moved back up here. So I knew that in the context of showing care, I was getting more care thrown back at me from the interactions with the people I walked alongside in quite vulnerable circumstances. And I knew that I had to come back, and part of that was wanting to give more care back to the community here.
And I suppose through that exposure that you've had to people who have opened themselves up and shown vulnerability to you, tonight, while you are the most humble guy ever and would never suggest it, it has provided you with some insight into the human condition and the things that people wrestle through as they go through pain and trauma. And so I'd love to get into this text, and for you to be able to give us kind of a little bit of a, what do you see? What do you hear? So that we too can discover what our role is in the care of others who are going through times of trauma too. So let's head into the text here. So this is what we hear from Jonah chapter 2. It says, "From inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God." I love the fact that it's still Lord his God, even in spite of what he's done. "He said, 'In my distress, I called to the Lord, and he answered me. From deep in the realm of the dead, I called for help, and you listened to my cry. You hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the current swirled about me. All of your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, I have been banished from your holy sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. The engulfing waters threatened me, or the waters were at my throat. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. To the earth beneath barred me in forever. So a lot of emotion going on there.
Yeah.
Yep. Tell us a bit about what some of those kind of deep emotions that you hear or might presume to be in the story of Jonah at this point.
Yeah, well, I guess you relate it to your own experiences, don't you? And, of course, your own wisdom and knowledge gained through working, for me, in this context, in the field. And I guess on the onset, I'd never assume I'd know somebody's experiences. Yeah, it's one story fits the individual's experiences, and it's their story to share. And that enables me to remain curious, yet I guess there'd be despair, there'd be anguish, there'd be vulnerable, and it'd be really uncomfortable situation, wouldn't it? And there'd be shame.
A lot of shame. Yeah, absolutely. And some of these things you pick up on, I appreciate, you know, you're just like, I don't presume to know someone's story. I mean, here we start to get a little bit, just a little bit of an insight into a bit of Jonah's story. You know, he talks about this distress and no doubt, like, I mean, I don't know what he was thinking when he was either thrown or jumped into the ocean. You know, did he think it was over? We don't really know. We don't actually get a lot of insight into to what extent Jonah thought this was the end. But he's suddenly swallowed by this big fish and he's in this state where he's alone outside of God and almost there to ruminate over his story and his thoughts. I mean, you've worked with people who are navigating shame before, and we know that shame is one of these things that we hear in Genesis 3 was one of the first kind of indicators of broken relationship with God, you know, where Adam and Eve knew they'd done the wrong thing and then they hid themselves and they covered themselves because they realized they were naked, you know. Tell me about what you've witnessed as you journey with people who are navigating things like shame and these deep emotions.
Now I'm trying to draw in context to what Jonah may perhaps have been experiencing. Through my understanding of shame and a lot of work previously, that shame is an indication almost of value awareness.
So unpack that for us. Value awareness, what does that mean?
Awareness of what is right from wrong. And, you know, in our context as Christians, right from wrong is based on our Christian values. And I think with shame, to be in context of shame, our problems arguably are socially and relationally experienced. Like, problems aren't problems alone. They're socially and relationally constructed. Thus, that, you know, we're all born in the image of God. So to experience shame is what we experience socially or relationally with others. And feedback from that is shameful if we know what has happened is wrong or what we've done is wrong or the situation we're in, is not, it's missing the mark.
And that missing the mark is an interesting idea because, you know, all of us have experienced sin and we know the realities of sin. We know we have missed the mark. And yet, at the same time, the journey through shame is the journey for some things to be, perhaps you could say, rediscovered about innate value, innate worth. And we had a conversation even earlier today talking about the fact that as we navigate shame, even the experience of shame is an indication of actually something positive. I forget the phrase you used, but this idea of this kind of almost the flip side of shame is an awareness of something that's actually great and valuable.
So what's absent but implied in shame is that you know difference between right and wrong is sort of touched on just before, and that, you know, for instance, to know sadness, we know happiness, otherwise how have we got that reference point?
Yeah.
And we entertain these problem stories. Why do in my context of my work initially, yet there's always these alternate stories of what does that problem represent in someone's life. Jonah, perhaps that was a brokenness. He had to rely on God.
And we do see that in the text here. I mean, we see this kind of flipping between the distress. I mean, he makes it really clear. He says, in my distress, I call to the Lord. So there's no doubt that he's going through these times of distress and despair. And you hear this kind of this flipping from, you know, in the realm of the dead, I called for help and you listened to my cry. So there's this almost kind of deliverance piece. Like, there's the hope. You did listen. But then it's also, you hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the current swirled about me. I love this phrase, and all your waves and breakers swept over me. You know, so you've kind of got this flipping between the God who is there and is present and is able to redeem, but also the fact that I know the consequences of my actions and the forces are also against me and I'm in this state of despair. Like, this flipping between these stories, like, for people as we journey through their pain, is that to be expected, this kind of back and forward?
Well, in my context, I guess, yes. And that flipping back and forth often, you know, someone will come to walk alongside me and there'll be almost a denial of who they are. Yeah, and I would suggest that's a problem getting in their way of who they actually really are as a person, and working through that guilt, shame, and taking that account of responsibility for who you are takes some vulnerability in itself, doesn't it? And being open to that feedback.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things you mentioned this morning was, and I kind of picked it up in here, and that informs that story that people are carrying. Like that verse 5, the engulfing waters threatened me or were at my throat, the deep surrounded me. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, what are the dominating voices that inform the kind of stories that people carry and their sense of worth about their circumstances or the hope in their circumstances, like these dominant voices, they're so evident. Like, you know, like we can't escape the voices. I mean, where do you see some of those voices emerging from that are informing people's pain and trauma?
Well, you know, initially, I mean, just with Jonah, I mean, he was informed by his hate, or his dislike towards what was God calling him to do, hey?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
And I think within my context, I'll mention denial, and to put that further in context to what I'm articulating is that denial of who they are because of dominating forces and discourses, which is assumptions and beliefs that are informed through social media in the context of my work, or the context of what's dominant, not by fact, but dominant by what is the status quo, for instance, and wanting to conform to that. Yet, individually, the conversations I have, people are often at odds with that and want to push against that. Yet, it can be quite overpowering or overwhelming and silence them and who they are.
I mean, within the context of Jonah, I think that idea of these dominating voices is quite fascinating, because while we don't get a full picture into what's informing Jonah's hostility toward the Ninevites, right, like all the way through this story, whether it's through running or even later we'll learn in kind of his minimal efforts in chapter 3 and then his sitting and watching and waiting for God's judgment in chapter 4, there's clearly a social hostility that is informing his perspective on the Ninevites that is really clouding his call and what God is calling him to and who God is calling him to become in this process. And so you do hear these dominant voices, and no doubt it takes quite a deliberate kind of either alternate voice coming in, somebody who's speaking truth or can cut through that, but also on behalf of the person who's experiencing that trauma, a significant step to break through or to maybe even contest some of those dominating voices. Would that be correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think initially it's hearing the problems in people's lives and the effects, not assuming that there's all negative, there's good, there's bad, there's in between, yeah. and coming with that curious mindset. As you know, like for Jonah, for instance, to experience sadness or brokenness, that implies that he wants something different in his life, doesn't it? And it's not something he's settling with; he's wrestling with it, I gather, yeah. Even literally. And and I think on that, if I find that when I align with the values, someone's values, and that's when this collaborative work can happen. Yeah. Hey. So there's not a challenge in their experiences because it's theirs alone. I can be influential. And they get to a point of challenge and based on what they value, which often is something different than what they're experiencing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, to flip that a little bit for the sake of us sitting here, like we all have a role in the care of others, whether it be family members or work colleagues. You know, again, we could rock up to our staff room any given day and someone suddenly presents with some form of angst, anger, trauma, guilt about anything, and maybe they've chosen to disclose that to us in some way or through their body language or whatever it might be. You've picked up on a few things here already, but you know, what are ways that we can become more present, I suppose you could say, or tuned into the kind of emotions that people might be experiencing or sharing? Are there things that you have learned over time that you can and maybe still employ, that just allows you to kind of dig that little bit deeper and not dismiss those kind of emotions, but actually go, oh, maybe there's some way that I can love, serve, contribute, learn through this instance?
I think something that sort of carries with me, and, you know, I think leaning into God sort of taught me that as well. But the problem's the problem, not the person. And often the expression of that through what, however it's expressed, it's an indication of something that they're experiencing, hey, and they're wrestling with, and being curious about that.
So just to repeat that again, the problem is...
The problem, not the person.
The problem is the problem, not the person.
Yeah. Yep. Assuming that there's greater values that they are wanting or a preferred way of living where the problem's getting... The problem stories are getting in the way of their life. Yep. Their preferred way of living, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this also taps into a word that you mentioned earlier. You said this idea of curiosity, you know, like as in this posture of curiosity, not invasive, obviously, not that kind of curiosity, but this sense of a readiness to listen and learn and not presuming, as we've said a number of times, somebody's story or what's informing their story, but just have a readiness and availability to be curious without, you know, obviously overstepping, if that's an informal setting, obviously.
Yeah, informal or formal, and I think it's coming with a couple of assumptions that the person coming to consult with myself has the capacity, they can make meaning of their own experiences, and there's always these fine threads of those experiences where my role is to influence bringing that out, if that makes sense, and that they know themselves far better than I ever will. God knows us far better than we ever will.
And I think there's something, again, just even in this early part of the prayer, we'll switch over to the second part in a second, but that sense in which, you know, obviously we get this beautiful, what appears to be a well-crafted prayer. You know, we don't 100% know, at least at this point in time, how long he spent in this fish. But I do get this picture, if we can be so artistically creative, of kind of going, well, at least the fish has presented an opportunity to diffuse some of those dissonant voices or those voices. It's just left with himself and God and the experience that he's had. And then you get this, like, you know, these quite emotive and provocative images that he uses. You know, to the roots of the mountain I sank down, the earth beneath barred me in forever. So, you know, you almost get this kind of rawness with which he is a sharing, and then, you know, obviously we get to be witness and privy to that, but I wonder if, yeah, that process of someone kind of going, actually, I can more deeply understand my experience because suddenly I've got space and time and permission to do so.
Yeah, for sure, and going back to that, you know, curiosity and without judgment, I think assists in that process and creating that space for that reflection. And you almost get to the point where you're co-researching the problem.
So you're almost co-researching the problem, as in?
You're gazing at it, you know, like literally using a whiteboard. So you're looking at the problem story together, you know, relying on the expert knowledge of the person who presents and their understanding of the problem.
Absolutely.
And that's wonderful nature of it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, for sure. Well, let's just kind of push forward to the second half of this prayer. Because it does kind of change its tone a little bit, which is just interesting. We'll unpack that in a second. Second part of verse 6, "But you, Lord my God, brought my life up from the pit. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them. But I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say, salvation comes from the Lord." That's really cool. I want to ask you a question about hope, but then there's a question that kind of has come to mind even as I've been reading that, so I'm going to just give you forewarning that's coming. But first of all, unpack to us what the role of hope plays when working with somebody who's going through grief, pain, trauma.
Sure.
Where does hope play this role? Because we hear this hope, this turning of the tide, so to speak, in Jonah.
Yeah, and I'm sure God had hope that Jonah would come to where he came to. Hey, hope's a large, significant part of the work that I do, of many of us work in the helping, learning profession, I think. And I think if we truly believe that there's an alternate story to the problem stories of what's been presented to us with the people who come into our space, that's picked up on, I think, and you truly believe. And that supports in the way that conversations are conducted then, doesn't it? And that implies that there's always these alternate stories, as you mentioned, these counter stories to the problems, and truly believing that. And there's histories of their own experiences that inform that. They've just been silenced.
I imagine there must be times, I mean, I've had this in my experience too, where sometimes someone will present with an issue or trauma or whatever it might be, and you actually have more hope than the person has in that moment. Like, as in, you know, like they come to you and you kind of this sense of kind of like, I can see that there's a possibility here. They maybe can't see it yet, you know, but they've had the courage enough to engage at the very least. How do you work with, and this is a tricky question, but how do you work with the timing of that? Because we've all experienced, but I've certainly witnessed at times where people, the people who are just so hopeful, but the person isn't ready to kind of engage with that hope yet. You know, there's kind of this element of timing to it where you want to be present and be offering that counter-narrative that there is hope, there is possibility. I'm glad that you have come. I'm glad that you have shared or disclosed to me. But at the same time, giving space to actually sit in that pain and work through what that problem is without trying to speed through to the solution, maybe? I'm not sure. Do you want to speak to that?
Or put my colonizing judgment on their situation. Great, as yeah. well. And I think that's an important aspect, hey, and that hope that I have for some, which is, I guess, maybe without assuming knowing their story, it's a position keeps me centered on being curious. You will need to loiter around the problem stories in people's lives. I mentioned stories because we're always telling stories. And the effects of that. And often the effects are based on what they value. And then when you get snippets, just slithers of those alternate stories of what those problems represent and what they value or wish, how they wish to live their life, then you can go down that road of alternate stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's so good. That pacing out. And I think just, you know, what you were saying before, to not confuse hope with solution, because I think that can be the mentality. It's like, I hear what you're doing. I can see a possible solution to this. But hope isn't just a solution. Hope is actually the journey for the healing for the person as they go through that process. Is that right?
Absolutely. And yeah. if you're dominated by those discourses or assumptions, beliefs that are so prominent in other ways, having something that was challenging those ideas that you start to believe in yourself can be quite refreshing.
So speaking of this kind of pacing and timing, this is the question that came to mind as I was reading this. Verse 8, those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them. So an idol is, you know, just something that we seek security in, I suppose, outside of God, we could say. That would be not an unreasonable definition of an idol. Working with people, particularly within the context of pain and trauma, I'm really curious. Some people really cling to their pain and trauma, you know, as in because it is familiar. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, does pain and trauma ever become an idol for people in such a way that they turn away from God's love? Like, that becomes like a barrier for God's love because they're clinging to that pain and trauma, which seems counterintuitive because why wouldn't you want to get rid of the pain and the trauma, right?
Absolutely.
But I don't know. What do you think about that?
I haven't looked at it in that context before, but whether it's an idol or not, I think it becomes something that you get used to and, as you're saying, familiar. And, you know, it's a role that you know well.
So it's like I know how to play my role in response to this trauma and this pain.
Absolutely. And, you know, and perhaps without knowing, because it's based on the individual's experience, it's enabled, assisted them to get through life. So it's not necessarily suggesting that, you know, I mean, it's a negative thing, isn't the pain and not wanting to go through that yet, it's had a purpose to get through something quite significant.
So trying to work out what that purpose is and whether or not that needs, you know, refining, removal, ultimately, whatever that person's journey might look like.
Absolutely. I mean, did God want Jonah to be swallowed by the big fish? I mean, you know, these situations we come up against, hey, where's that greater purpose without suggesting that anyone comes into a situation wanting to experience the problem, the pain.
And certainly, you know, there's a sense in which it's like we're really clear, I think, all the way through the story of Jonah, there is this refrain of God deeply wanting Jonah to know his heart. Like, so I want you to understand my heart. And we'll get more of that in Jonah chapter 4, where God asks these questions about you know, is your anger justified? You know, do you understand what these Ninevites are like? You know, who don't know their left hand from their right? Like, do you understand my heart of compassion that leads people toward, that ought to lead my followers toward, you know, Christ likeness, even though it's a little bit pre-Christ in that regard. But there's a sense of like, yeah, God wants us to be on that journey, but we've got to meet people where they're at, and that's what God really is doing in the story of Jonah. He's meeting him where he is at.
Where he's at, yeah. And that's definitely part of my what I see as my position of privilege and hearing many stories. And it's a gift. Every day I get given gifts, and hopefully I acknowledge and honour that in a way where God honours who I am as well, and Jonah, where he was at. So I need to be still in that.
Like, the idea of a gift is an interesting one, particularly for us who, you know, we might, again, encounter someone who's going through pain, trauma, and we want to be loving, but also it's kind of exhausting, potentially. If someone presents something to us, there's no take-backs. You know, we can pretend, we can deny that we heard it or whatever it might be, but especially if the Spirit is at work within us, I believe we seek to echo the characteristic of God in His compassion. And so it's a burden, but also a gift, you know, and so I suppose, you know, for all of us, I think there is that challenge of going, like, when someone does present with this, when we suddenly get a little insight or snapshot into their story, God is there too. We are there. So what is our response? Will we have that curiosity? Will we listen? Will we not seek to turn the hope into a solution or vice versa? Some big, big questions for us on the ground doing this kind of engaging work each day.
Absolutely. And we do it. We all go through, you know, every day, don't we? Hey, and that's not suggesting that I'm immune to emotion, because, I mean, hey, I think that's a recognition in my own vulnerability, and that idea of mutual vulnerability is sharing a space in a room, and that's, it needs to be acknowledged. And I think I don't get out of there without the effects either. So,
yeah, and I just want to pick up on this just as we kind of wrap up a little bit. I love this last verse 9 here, but I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say salvation comes from the Lord. And so we get this, again, this refrain of Jonah, who actually does, again, we cannot deny he knows the character of God, even while he protests the implications of that character. What kind of characteristics of God, for people who are open to faith, you know, because not every client is going to be open to faith in any particular season, but for those who are open to faith, what characteristics of God have you found most resonate with people who are going through trauma? Are there any characteristics that just kind of come up as this regular refrain?
For themselves or recognizing that in others?
Probably for themselves, as in, like, you know, God's role or God, this characteristic of God, this is deeply meaningful for me as I seek to emerge from where I am to where this healing or redeemed or restored place that God wants me to be.
Yeah, it's an interesting reflection. And I think bringing forth that through the pains and the struggles, that there is a God, there's always acts of resistance. There's acts of resistance that may not be acknowledged or identified through their story of journey of pain, which may seem insignificant, yet if we can draw them out about what that means for their ability to remain hopeful that they will get through it.
Yeah, sure.
I think that's...
So God meeting, as in, like, these points of contesting that pain where it's just like, actually there's been a whole number of moments where there has been something has broken, or an assumption was broken, or there's been to use your word, you're contesting that pain and saying this doesn't have to be this way.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, those seeds are being planted all the time.
Yeah,
and part of coming to see me, for instance, in the context of my work, is that's part of wanting something different. Yet recognizing there's a history of wanting something different. Otherwise, why are you still here?
And I think about the ministry of Jesus, and I think about the way that he entered into culture, and he brought hope, even through the Beatitudes. This invitation, you know, to those who are weary and broken, and said, actually, there is a future, there is a kingdom, as he would describe it, you know, that is bigger and better. And through acts of healing, where he said, you know, your life doesn't have to be the same way. And for some people, that was through teaching, and some was through physical healing. And there was all these different kind of ways that there was a resistance to what people were experiencing and saying there is something else. So the God, I mean, when I hear that, I just think of faithfulness. Like I think about the characteristic of faithfulness of God, that there's God is engaging in all these moments, like we don't always know how, and we don't always know the duration and what that looks like, but we meet God in those places all throughout our journey at various points in time.
Yeah, and you just got me thinking about characteristics of God. I think being believed.
Sorry, say that again.
Being believed, whatever that story is, I think have that
be
sense
believed.
Of being believed. Yeah, is what they're seeking, their own truths.
Yeah, awesome. Well, as we wrap up today, I can't help but finish off this story with the one verse that remains in Jonah chapter 2. So click through here. It says in verse 10, "And the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land." And in some ways, I feel like that, and that's where we're going to pick up the story. Next week, Si's going to speak to Jonah chapter 3. But you really do get this change of season. It's like, I've been in the fish, I've experienced this, and now I've been vomited onto dry land. And no doubt that can sometimes be people's experience. They've gone through the trauma, they've reflected, they've understood themselves, maybe they've diffused some of those competing voices, and it feels like they've gone through vomit. And now they're on this new land. It's like, well, what is next? Like that's got to be a relatively common story in this journey toward healing and restoration.
Absolutely, because with that, and that idea of, you know, I wouldn't say there's safety in the mouth of a big fish, but it becomes that what you know, and then vomiting out, there's something new to experience, isn't it? You're suddenly thrown out there, and you're vulnerable again. It's a different vulnerability that you're experiencing, isn't it?
Absolutely, and no doubt Jonah is going to, all the stuff that he's been wrestling with and seeking to reconcile and been running away from, suddenly, yeah, like you say, he's no longer in the fish anymore. There was some sort of weird kind of security about just being with him and the fish and God, that suddenly he's going to encounter, again, his enemy, so to speak, with the Ninevites. And all of that work that has been done is going to be challenged again.
Yeah, and tested.
Again. Yeah. Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us, Tim, and your perspective, particularly coming from that counselling position. Some things that I suppose for us, that I picked up on in this conversation is, again, that desire to be curious without an imposing but a genuine desire to be curious, and treating these disclosures as a gift, you know, and not as a burden, but as a gift to be engaged with, that God is meeting people in every single phase and every single journey of their life, are just some of the things, and then we get to partner with God in that, are just some of the great encouragements that I've kind of heard as we consider not only the things that we wrestle with in the various fishes we are in, but also the role that we play in caring and loving and serving others in whatever vocation we're a part of. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
No worries. Let me just close in prayer as we consider what we might want to take away from these reflections today. Jesus, Lord, thank you for the way that you teach us through the story of people like Jonah. There was resistance, there was a wrestling, there was self-awareness, and a recognition of who you are. And so, God, I want to pray that we, in our own journeys, would have the courage to be able to wrestle, particularly if we are dealing with big emotions, grief and shame, anger, these ones that can be so debilitating and ones that we can even turn into various idols in our life. I want to pray that we would invite you into this process of healing. Help us to be vulnerable. Raise up people around us to be people who can be vulnerable too. And help us, Lord, to be that person for others. And God, just as Jonah declared as he went through his own wrestling process, salvation belongs to the Lord. May that too be our cry, that you are the one who saves. You're the one who meets us in these places and takes us one step forward. You are faithful. In your name. Thank you. Amen.